All right, let's go. Let's go. Questions, queries, quandaries, anything for me? Not that I know what you'd ask me, but since I'm not usually here. Okie doke. So we got a couple goals for the day. First off, we're going to finish up with what we were doing on Wednesday, and then we are going to talk about encryption and why that's important to computer science. But let's start with what we were doing on Wednesday. So on Wednesday, we were writing this tax program, which hopefully you had an opportunity to go work on. Gosh, my mic is turned up loud. I already scream. I don't need it that much louder. Anyway, so we were doing this tax program. And what we were looking at specifically was how we could nest the if-else statements. So let's review what we got up here just to make sure we know we're all on the same page. So again, scanner, whoopee, y'all have done it a bazillion times, and you'll keep doing it a bazillion times until April rolls around. We prompt the user, string line equals keyboard.next line, which gives us the next line off of whatever they type, all the way to the next return character, which is important. At the end of the last class, I looked at a couple different people who were working on the BMR program for homework 2, and one of the things that you were doing, or not doing, was burning the new line. So what happens is when you do next double, what happens is it reads the next number, but it doesn't actually read the new line character at the end of that. So if you don't call next line, that new line remains until you read number, 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 and then when you ask for new line, in the buffer, which remembers everything that you have typed before, or it's ready up cut that's ready to be read, it says, ooh, all these new lines, and just reads them and your program just ends. So make sure you're burning those new line characters after you do next double. But anyway, so we do string line equals keyboard.next line gives us the next string. But a string is not a character, and we're interested in characters here. So we have to do a little bit more work. So car C equals line.car at 0. So car C being a character, okay? By doing line.car at, it goes to the position 0 and gives us back a single character. Java being weird, starting from 0, 0 is the first character. Now, in the if statement, C being the variable, double equal sign. Single equal sign means make things equal. Double equal sign means tell me if they are equal. I remember that. Single equal, make them equal. Double equal, ask them if they're equal. Now, the why there is in single quote marks. Why is the why in single quote marks? Because it's a character. Characters are denoted by having single quote marks. If I was going to compare to a string, what would I have? I'd use double quotes, and I would not be using double equal sign. Double equal sign does not work terribly well with strings. I don't care if you tried it and it works. I promise you it will fail on you sometime. So it's in single quote marks. If there were no quote marks whatsoever, it would be treated as a, not a string, variable. Good thought, though. String is, we'll have double quotes. Good. So we're all on board here. Show of fingers. This makes sense. 5 means yes, 1 means no. Everyone seems to be on board. People just waving as they go by. Yeah! Someone just left. You know so much, you already left. All right, so let's get the rest of this in here. So if, oh, I'm missing something. What am I missing before I do another if statement? What am I not doing yet? Well, no, good thought. Missing semicolons is always something. What else am I missing? I've asked for married, but I haven't asked for income. Income. If you're going to ask the user for something, what should you always do before you do the new line? How does the user know what to type? Gotta prompt the user. Gotta prompt the user. System.out.print, not print line. What is your income? Do something like that. We'll prompt them for it now. We'll just do int. Income equals keyboard.next int. Terribly exciting, but now I've got all the data that I need. Now I can build a nice, if income is less than, I don't know what it was, married. Wait, if C is yes, they are married. If it's less than 50,000, okay, then system.out.println, no taxes. Yay. Else if, I'm going to check two conditions here. I could do multiple different things, but I'm going to put two conditions just so you can see it. If income is now greater than or equal to 50,000, and income is less than 80,000. Let's do some copy-paste coding here. Thunk. Your taxes are... Wow, dadgummit. Income times 0.1. Right? And then in any other case, else, grab, paste, 0.25. Now, this is one way of doing this kind of decision tree with the if-else statements. What's another way I could have done this? Because now I just check for one side of the tree, if yes or no, and then inside of that I do some more. What else could I have done? Combinations and permutations. Oh, God, math. Okay, yes, combinations and permutations. So think about this for a second. If I did every possible combination, how could I have written that up here?
Is it Friday or is it that hard? Or both? It could be both. I'd accept both. What if I said,
if C is Y, ampersand, ampersand, income is less than 50,000. If C is Y, ampersand, ampersand, income is greater than or equal to 50,000, and ampersand, ampersand, less than 80,000. If C is Y, you see the thing, I could break it all out. But that's not the way you want to do this, because then you're going to have so many different if statements, it's just going to be crazy. You're going to keep retesting that C equals Y. So you want to nest them much like this so that you're not tripping over yourself with every different possibility. Now, I'm not going to type the rest of this up here. That will just be a waste of our time today. I think you could probably figure out from here how the next case goes. But is there any questions about this? Are there any questions about how this works? Yes, ma'am. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Income is greater than or equal to, which actually I like so much better than if you were, you know, writing the math and you drew the line and you drew the line underneath it, because this you can actually just read it across. Greater than equal to. Yep, greater than or equal to. What else? Everyone feels good and confident about how to do this type of thing. Now, I will point something out to you. One of your assignments for homework 2 is one of my favorite programs, which is Roman. I haven't even started Roman yet. Like 6 people. Awesome. Okay. Pro tip. Now that you have the power of the if, else, if statement, it is a very, very bad idea. By the way, if you haven't even looked at the homework yet, which is a possibility, remember that the Roman is going to take a number and give you back the Roman numeral. So if I type in MMCMV, that should be 2,905. Okay? Wait, I got it wrong. Damn it. Don't do that. You want the other way around. You type in 2,905 and it prints out MMCMV. Sorry. Whatever. See? 4 years of Latin in high school and 1 year of Latin in college, and you two can screw up Roman numerals in front of another college class. Something to aspire to. Anyway, my pro tip is not to say, if 1, print this. If 2, print this. If 3, print this. If 4, print this. If 3,997, print this. If 3,998. Do you really think we want you to type an if 4,000 if-else statements? Do you think that that's what we want you to do? If that ever crosses your mind, pinch yourself. No, Although whenever it gets submitted, we do laugh. Because we're like, oh my God, that must have taken forever. And it's the actual program is like this long. And they wrote like this much. Because it's like 4,000 times 3, so it's like 12,000 lines of code. Don't do that. Okay, we're good on this. Excellent. Another of your homework assignments is one of my favorite as well. There's a lot of ones in homework, too, that I really like. BMR is not one of them. Roman is one. The other is Caesar. I love encryption. I love cryptography, which is hidden writing, which is, it has its foundations. Computer science has its foundations in cryptography. We care a lot about cryptography and computer science, not only from the idea that there's a lot of data in the world. Was anyone affected by the Target hack? You got your credit card stolen? Anyone in here? No one? That's great. Oh, okay, one person, yeah. Me too. I just got the notification my new credit card's on the way. So cryptography, security matters a lot because of the data we're dealing with. But let's build up to that. Let's go way, way, way back, in the long, long ago, in the way back time. The very first forms of encryption. What was the very first way that people kept other people from reading things, from seeing their messages? You want to take a wild stab? Yep, you couldn't read. Pretty darn good way to keep things secret if the people that you are carrying your message can't read. Here, take this to the Prince of Germany. Oh, okay. And then they would leave. And the message was probably safe because they had no idea what was going on. In the time of Caesar, Julius Caesar, he was making his way through Gaul, which modern day France, making his way through Gaul. Eventually he was going to go up into the United Kingdom, fighting the forces of Boudica. And he was sending messages to his generals. And at this time, there were many others in the world that could read and write Latin. And so there was an issue with him getting these messages to his generals, such that the generals would know the message, but yet the bad guys? Who's the bad guy? The people being conquered or Julius Caesar? Regardless, so the Gauls would not read the messages. So he came up with a brilliant way of encrypting his messages, which now is as simple as what we see Ralphie do in Christmas Story. And actually, it is the same thing that Ralphie does in Christmas Story. We call it the Caesar cipher. Now, the Caesar cipher is a specific type of cipher. By the way, the word cipher is an algorithm for encrypting. You should know that term. Cipher is an algorithm for encrypting. Okay? The thing that we start with before it is decrypted is called the plain text. The thing that is encrypted is called the ciphertext. Up here on the screen, I have some ciphertext. I'll zoom in on that in a minute. Caesar's mechanism for encrypting his messages before he sent them to Gaul was to take every letter and move it ahead by 3. So if he was going to write an A for the phrase alia acta est, which is one of the things he sent, which is the die is cast, A, B, C, D. And he wrote D. That's it. And he looped around. High-grade encryption here, but it worked. Take 2 seconds, maybe more than 2 seconds. Take a minute. Decrypt this for me. If you move ahead 3 to encrypt, what do you do to decrypt? Decrypt that. Go. Talk to the people around you if you need to. The alphabet is provided for those who need it. What? This is actually old. When I made that slide, it was summertime, and I was. And now I've been actually twice since I wrote that. I was fortunate enough to have a conference in Anaheim, and I was like, well, okay. What does it say? Mark is going to Disney. So, yeah, I wrote that over the summer when I was doing this lecture last time. It was over the summer, and I was about to go to Disney. At that time, Disney World. I like Disney a lot, but neither here nor there. Not too tough. I think you could have handled that. That wasn't too hard to decrypt. Not too difficult. This type of cipher, by the way, is called a substitution cipher. Substitution cipher is one in which you take a letter or character and you substitute it with something else. For instance, here's another one. And you might look at this and you go, oh my gosh, this makes absolutely no blessed sense. Well, this is another layer of encryption, so to speak. This is kind of obfuscation on top of the encryption. This cipher was used by the Freemasons. It's called the Masonic cipher or the Pigpen cipher. Go use the Wikipedia thing, look up Pigpen cipher, and take a second and decrypt this. See if you can figure out how this mechanism works. Don't use the version of the Pigpen cipher that's from Assassin's Creed 2. You'll see that on the page. I didn't use that one. Pigpen cipher. How does this work? What does it say? Ah, I've got you on tape saying it. Awesome. I'll say, Luther, guess what I got them to do? Listen. Just give them the sound bite. Of course, you did kind of say, Luther is awesome. So maybe it won't have that much of an effect. Yeah, okay. Again, I'm picking cheesy phrases. But regardless, this is interesting because why? Why might this be better than just Caesar cipher? Why might this be better? Yeah. You have to know the key as well. And honestly, as you noted, and some young ladies over here found out, if you decide to write down the cipher squares differently, then you actually have a completely different encryption key. So you can agree on a different way of writing the squares, and it might be a little bit more secure, as long as you don't use the standard A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, you know, two tic-tac-toe boards and then two X's. You actually have another layer of security here. Also, you'd look at this and you might just go, "What? I don't know what this is. It's chicken scratch. There's no secret message here." And you might leave it alone. But again, this suffers from a very, very similar problem that the last one does. How many of you ever watched Wheel of Fortune? Okay. Bonus round. What are your letters? R-S-T-L-N-E. It just rolls off the tongue. We know them now. R-S-T-L-N-E. Why is it R-S-T-L-N-E? The most common letters in the English language. Poe, Edgar Allan Poe, I know you've been to his room. Everyone goes to his room. Everyone, when you bring your family, you take him, look, it's Poe's room. It's very exciting. Press the button. We'll learn about him doing his exams in English and French and Latin. I've hit that button so many times. Anyway, he wrote a short story called The Gold Bug. And in the short story, The Gold Bug, he presents this ciphertext right here, which again looks like utter gibberish. However, Because it is a substitution cipher, the characters are able to determine how to decrypt it by a methodology called frequency analysis. Now, the top graph is the frequency of the letters in the ciphertext. The bottom graph is the frequency of the letters that appear in the English language. You take the two graphs, you take the counts of each, you make some guesses here or there, and all of a sudden you have figured it out. Frequency analysis. Computers are very, very good at this sort of thing, about adding up things, making comparisons, and figuring out which way to go. But this isn't that hard to figure out. This is not that hard to figure out. So if you determine that the first letter is E, most common, now you find that with two other characters in front of it over and over and over, that word is probably the. You use that to start figuring out, okay, now here's some single character words, which are most likely, single character words are most likely A or I. And then, okay, one of those is A, one of those is I have two different ones. You start, and it just falls apart at that point. Frequency analysis, pretty powerful. All right, so maybe substitution ciphers aren't necessarily the way to go. Maybe substitution ciphers are a little too rough. What if we could add a little flair to our cipher? This is called a route cipher. A route cipher is a different category of cipher called a transposition cipher. The point of a transposition cipher is we are going to use all of the same letters that we used in the original, except we're going to mess up the ordering. The trick is, can you figure out how to put them back in order? So, this one's kind of hard to do unless you've seen it before, so I'm going to come down here and just show you. But the way it works is this. That has 25 characters in it. Picture a clock. If I was to take 25 characters and turn them into something regular that looked like a clock, what would be my rows and columns size? Clocks are round. 5 by 5. If I was to start at midnight, where would I start with my square? Right at the top. So let's start. P-I-E. I'm going to 3 o'clock, so I'm going clockwise. P-I-E-H-A-H-A-L-B-A-R-N. A-Y-R-C-K-S-E-D-N. Ryan rides a pink bicycle, ha ha. So if you were Ryan and you ride a pink bicycle, I gotcha. Otherwise, this is actually about a friend of mine named Ryan who rides a pink bicycle, for whom I like to make fun of. But not often, because he's a very big guy and he could kill me. Route cipher. Why might this not be, I mean, it's interesting, but why might this not necessarily be the best thing to do? Absolutely. There is a lot of room here for human error. You know, you have to completely agree on how this is going to work. So maybe this isn't going to work. There are other things that were tried. And another of my favorites, particularly during World War I and World War II, was used by spies. Now, one thing that soldiers in World War I and II had on them a lot were decks of playing cards. Here's a nice thing. How many letters are in the English alphabet? 26. How many cards are in a deck of cards without the jokers? 26 times 2. Oh my God! It works out so well. So we could do things like the ace of hearts is an A, and the two of hearts is a B, and the three of hearts is a C, and you can encode things. So you've got your message already, you got your deck of cards, you're ready to just slyly just pass it off to your contact when you're captured. What do you do? You immediately take out your cards and start shuffling. Or you play 52-card pickup, I guess. There's many different things you potentially could do. But that was actually pretty useful, called the solitaire cipher, another form of a substitution cipher, but it could be cracked as well. So I'll just jump really quick to... I'll do the next cipher. So what we need is a cipher that is a little bit stronger, but still relatively easy to remember and to use. A Frenchman by the name of Vignier came up with a polyalphabetic substitution cipher, which sounds really, really fancy. But let me show you how it worked. You would take a message that you want to encode, like... Is it on screen? Yep. Attack at dawn. Very exciting. And I need a key. Bacon. And I'd write bacon over and over and over, and then start to get hungry. And then I would do math. Assuming A is 0, B is 1, something like that. 0 plus 1, well, it's B. That's still T. T plus C, okay. I have to figure out what T is and figure out what C is and do the math. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's too much. That's too much math. So we have this. This is a Vignier square. So if I was to encode T by C, here's T, here's C, we find where they meet, that's V. What? Oh, that was a question. Sorry. So that would be the encoding. How would you decode? Okay, so we know that T, and so T is the original letter, C is the key letter, V is what comes out. So to decode, you know the key letter, you know the key letter if you're decoding, which is C, and you know the cipher, which is V. So how do we get back to T? Yep. So we have to find, so I'm going to do, yeah, so you said, okay, I know I have V, or I guess we could do this. I know I have C is my keyword. I scroll down. I'm such a computer nerd. C, go down to V, and I find T. Now, I'm not going to leave this up here. You can go and look this up in the wonderful Wikipedia. If you look for Vignier, you will find it. Decrypt that. Now, city in Virginia where Poe lived is your key. So go figure out what city in Virginia... It's not Charlottesville. Go find the city in Virginia that Poe lived in. Use the Vignier square and see if you can decrypt that one and see how much harder it is. Get to it. Let me make that a little bigger. That looks a little small. Give me a second. What? You keep staring at me. What's up?
He's testing my memory.
Of?
Your shirt.
And my spelling of veneer.
Oh, veneer's hard to spell.
And like his shirt. Like just random things like that.
Something that she saw in general passing, she'll just, oh, well, this is what it was.
Oh. Please do raise your hand if you have a question. I'm happy to come around.
Adding the letters, do we count the spaces as zero?
You ignore the space completely. So with your keyword, whenever you hit the space, just jump the space and put a split in the word. All right. Who has it? Computers are awesome. Yay! Another cheesy phrase. Awesome. Great. Yeah, so doing that by hand. How much fun was that? Yeah, not terribly much fun. Now, you probably could have gotten C-O-M-P, and you kind of counted out the rest of the letters. All right, you just kind of skipped it and moved on. You got A-W, you're like, all right, fine, Sheriff. Okay, awesome. You could have finished. You might have finished it a little bit faster. But imagine encrypting or decrypting an entire paragraph by hand. That sounds awful. I've had to do it before. It's really not fun. There is an organization that I participate with called Raven Chase, which is out of Richmond. And what they do is they put on things that are, it's kind of like a combination of Amazing Race and Da Vinci Code, so to speak. You run around Richmond finding clues, solving puzzles like this, usually harder than this. And then you have to eventually pick up a set of clues, and that tells you where the finish line is, and you have to get past the finish line in order to win. So there at the beginning, my wife and I, who were running, along with Professor Bloomfield and his wife from computer science, and we were losing pretty effectively all the time. And then someone pointed out that they had their iPad with them. Like, why would you have your iPad with you? They're like, oh, did you ever go to Sharky's Veneer Cipher, where you just type it in and it does it for you? Really? Like, yeah, we solved that puzzle in 2 seconds because we typed it in and it just worked. The internet, yep, there you go. Type it there, type the keyword there, type it there, and it works. TWOWGHRUJITLMKRVFUG. Richmond, decode. I hate you people who win all the time now. So then I made my own page that did this and Caesar and all these other ciphers all the time. I can just type everything in. And we started doing better. Computers are stupid. You know this. You've probably yelled at it a few times. But they only do what you tell them to. But they're really, really good at doing repetitive tasks over and over and over. Now that you know how Veneer works, how might you program this? Just think algorithm. Don't think Java. Think algorithm. What steps could you do? What's one way of doing this?
Well, every character has a
has a number assigned to it?
Every character has a number assigned to it, so you can just do the math and then work it and then go backwards and forwards. That's a great way of doing it. What else could you do? As awful as this might be to program, you could actually program in the chart and then do it as if it was a chart. There's a few other ways you could do it, but that's the great thing about, you know, writing these algorithms. There's so many different ways you could potentially go about it. The number way is the right way, by the way. But that's just it. So, encryption, up through this point, very manual. Vignier was, I think it was 1800s. During World War II, the Germans had their Enigma machine. And the Enigma machine was what they were using to send encrypted messages to U-boats and also to fighter planes to attack Britain. A man by the name of Alan Turing, who was a British mathematician and computer scientist, basically cracked the code by programs he wrote and made it so that the British would know when the attacks were coming. Because of his efforts, there's a lot of stuff in there that we could say that he really, really contributed to helping the Allies win World War II. There is no Nobel Prize in computer science. There is the Alan Turing Award. That's how important encryption and cryptography is to computer science. The highest award in it is named for a guy that did that. So, you are moving down that path now to do a little bit of that. Caesar, in your assignment. Now, there's a couple different ways you could do Caesar, but let's think about the way that Caesar work, that characters work. You've seen the ASCII chart, right? No, yes, yes, no. Let's look at the ASCII chart. Maybe you've forgotten the ASCII chart. Maybe you don't feel like talking. Maybe it's Friday afternoon and you just are waiting for me to say leave. I don't know. It could be any of the above. The ASCII chart, which looks terrible, but it gives a numeric value for every character. So if we look up here, let's think about PDUN, which is Mark, P-D-U-N, from the original Caesar cipher. P, if I can find it, capital P, value of 80. Okay, capital P has a value of 80. If I subtract 3 from 80, some really difficult math here. If I subtract 3 from 80, I get 77. 77 is the letter M. You can do a Caesar cipher in Java very easily by leveraging this table. If you think about the idea that every character is actually an integer, which is the truth, all you have to do is do the math. Take every character and move it by the appropriate amount. You know how to get a character to a particular position. I showed you how to do that at the beginning of class. What method do you call to get a character to a particular position? Car at. That's kind of how it works. So you too could be sending messages like alia octa est or what have you as you encode Caesar cipher. Questions about any of this? It was lovely being with y'all for the past couple days. Maybe I'll see you again. Who knows? I see no reason to not give you 10 minutes back. Have a wonderful afternoon. Have a wonderful weekend. See you later. I love that when you're a guest lecturer because it's like, oh, you good job. It's like 10 minutes. Yeah. We're out of here.